Hey everyone, this is Stelly Efti.
And this is Heaton Shah.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about how to give good support, even great support, to your customers as a startup.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit, we got it!
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Right? We want you to do your best.
So support is one of these topics that's not super glamorous, right? You don't read that much about it. Once in a while, some company will write about it. And it is a really important topic for our business for a multitude of reasons. So I felt like we should explore this topic on how founders, when you are a founder, when you run a startup, How do you need to think about giving support? How many resources do you offer them? What kind of support do you do? Is this a cost center versus a potential revenue center? So I just wanted to riff-raff and brainstorm around your thoughts on giving support and building a support team and offering support to customers and mistakes that companies make and the way that the kind of state in which most startups today think about this topic and how the two of us think about it.
Really like this topic. And I think support, as you said, is one of the most important things in any business, especially when it comes to software, because people are using your software. But in any industry, whether it's a physical product you're creating or whatever, support can be a make or break for your customers. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but my thoughts on support are like based on actually having to do a ton of it. And for literally the first couple of years of both Kissmetrics and Crazy Egg, I did the majority of it, if not all of it, like a crazy person. But one of the side effects, which I think I didn't realize until, you know, it started happening, was that people love it when the founder, CEO, that type of person is providing support and they see their name, their signature, et cetera, on it. Don't be not genuine about it and fake it. But then the other thing I'd say is there's been startups out there that have literally where the CEO founder has given out their phone number, right? And said, call me anytime. I don't think I've ever gone to that extreme. I flirt with that extreme these days. Although like, you know, with some of the scale we have, even before we launch something these days, it would be insane. But I've seen founders do that and it's been really interesting. There was a company I think called Wasabi, if I'm not mistaken, that was going against Mint.com in the personal finance space. And yeah, the CEO founder gave his phone number to call me anytime. And this was like years ago. So it was kind of, he's the one that comes to mind because I think that was the first time I really internalized that tactic.
Yeah. And I remember, I think even Jason Fried from Basecamp being inspired by that and then offering CEO office hours so he would have a phone number and people could just call him and they would record these conversations. He would just give advice about anything and everything people wanted during a certain amount of time. I think that was the format. And then there's companies that I remember as we were starting this company being inspired by hearing the stories from Stripe, for instance, where the founders, I think for the first year or 2 years of the business, were offering almost 24/7 kind of live chat support to people, not on the phone, right? It's not kind of the ideal medium for most engineers to communicate with other engineers and like debug things and fix things and help with code or any other stuff. But there were like almost 24/7 in live chat, answering questions, helping fix things and learning about their customers, which is one of the main reasons why I totally subscribe to the idea that we did this as well, that in the beginning, and for probably a much longer time than most people think, oh, the beginning, it's the first 3 months I'll give support as a founder until we have 10 customers and then we need a support team. Now, we had the entire team, which was a small team, but the entire team of like 5-6 people give support to all the founders for the first year, year and a half, maybe even two, I don't know. Like it was for a very long time, almost everybody was kind of on support duty. And then once the support grew to an insane amount where because our customer base had grown so much that we couldn't just do it and it slowed everybody down too much, we had one of my founders, to run support full time. And up until recently, he was like the main, and still is actually the lead on the support side. Although we have a support team now, he's still the one that's managing the support team as a founder of the business. It's that important. And the reason why it's that important, especially in the early days, but it's important, I think, forever as a business, is that support is where you're closest to your customers when they have real issues, when shit gets real, right? It's not the marketing and sales side. It's all about like, it's the flirting period, right? Where you tell people all the great things your software is about to do for them in the future. Support is really like the day-to-day things that you're, where your software fails, where it's buggy, where it's confusing to people, where people struggle. And even beyond just your product, you get to know your customers and their overall struggles, the things they are struggling with in their business, with their team, with their company, with their technology stack. So it is such an incredible way to build a relationship, build a brand, help your customers get more value out of the product, but also gain insights in your customer's life and mind and problems that they have and come up with ideas of things to build for them and things to make easier and better for them. That disconnecting that from people that have real decision-making power in the company and offshoring that or giving that to some like the cheapest people you can find on the planet to just answer questions in a way that we've all experienced in support in a not helpful way where people are just, you know, you can tell from the first interaction with some support team in some companies that these people don't know this product. They have not used it. They don't understand me as a customer. It's just some person that has like a template of a knowledge base they can copy paste answers to and a protocol on how to answer, but they really don't understand anything, which is incredibly frustrating. So, I mean, I could go on and on and on why it's important, but I totally believe that like the founders should give support in the beginning and the founding team should be really involved in giving support for a really long period of time because it's incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I can't argue with you at all. And what I really liked you say is about being that close to the customer. I think that's something that is underappreciated about customer support, right? People do oftentimes think of it as an afterthought, but the amount of learnings that I would get personally and our teams would get when we actually took the time to do that was priceless. It's always priceless. It's like you're literally sitting there on the front line hearing the, you know, them yelling at you or singing your praises and talking about these things, right? And you have all kinds of opportunities. Like if they hate you for some reason or don't like something, you get to say, hey, what's up? How do we fix this, right? And I know it sounds bad, but like just like with team members, oftentimes when the customer knows that, you know, it's the CEO, it's a founder, it's some, yeah, co-founder, whatever, they feel more confident and more trust with the business. And I can't underscore that. Like, just think about the times when you've been in a restaurant and the owner comes to you and says, how's everything doing? Is everything all right? Do you need anything else? And how does that make you feel? That'll make you come back to it, right?
Yeah, I love that example. It's such a powerful example because that makes it so real. You know, when you're in a small kind of mom and pop shop restaurant or even in a nice big restaurant and the owner shows up to apologize for an issue or to help with something or to just give you a little bit of attention, it makes such a significant difference in your experience as a customer and how much you feel connected to the business, how well you feel treated. If you have an issue and the owner takes the time to listen to you, hear you out, you feel like you're talking to somebody that can make a difference and where what you're saying can make a difference in the business versus you're talking to an employee that, you know, it's not even their fault and they can't really change anything about this. So they're just listening to you to listen to you. So, and you can build a relationship. You feel connected to the business in a very human way because now you know Mary or Bob that are the owners of this restaurant, right? You instantly feel differently about it than if it's just an Italian place or if it's just a sandwich place. So I love that you chose that as an example. I think it's super powerful. The other thing, as we're riff-raffing on support, and we'll get a bit more tactical soon, but the other thing that I would say, the way that we look at support, it's not just about, you know, helping our customers with their problems and fixing their issues so they stay successful and happy for as long as possible. That's a big component, obviously. But support is because of the intimacy to the customer, because you're so close to them and all you do all day long is interact with customers, even more so than, probably more than any other department, which is crazy. Even the sales team is spending less time truly communicating with like potential customers than the support team because the support team does nothing else. It's like one communication interaction after the other. It's a massive amount of opportunities that can come out of the support team. So in our team, our support team is pretty amazing. And these guys, they will spot opportunities for the sales team in their interactions with prospects and customers. So they'll ping the sales team and go, I just talked to this customer, they had this problem, I helped them fix it, but I learned in the process that they're just about to hire X more people, but they're struggling with our hire plans. Maybe you should reach out and try to help them or convince them or sell them on this upgraded plan because I think it really helped them. Or I've talked to this person that's in a trial and I think they really need help with XYZ and then they're going to buy. Like they spot these sales opportunities and they pass them on to the sales team. They'll spot marketing opportunities. You know, they'll talk to a customer that's incredibly successful and will rave about some specific thing they did with Closeout that give them this, you know, help them increase the volume of calling by 45% or something. And then they'll go, wow, that's awesome. And they'll pass that on to the marketing team and go, hey, marketing team, I just interacted with this customer. They're really happy. I think they would make a great case study. They have all these numbers to show and support that Closeout is making a difference for them. They can sometimes they interact with somebody and, you know, it's a success opportunity. And we can talk a little bit about success and support, but it's an opportunity for like, this is a larger account. This is just a junior rep that has this issue with us, has a tiny issue. But once we interacted with that person in support, we realized that the overall team probably has some really significant issues and needs training or something else. So the support team can come up with marketing ideas, can come up with sales opportunities, can obviously come up with a lot of like engineering and product suggestions and bug fixes or at least bug reports. So support can touch the product, the marketing, selling, like every single part of the brand of the business. Hey, I've noticed all our customers are using this these words to describe us. Like our support team is very active in being kind of the glue between different teams and touching very different areas in the business just by their knowledge and their insights. And I think that support teams that are managed and structured and designed to just deal with the issue as quickly as possible and be as disconnected from the rest to quote unquote save everybody else time, they turn into a real cost center versus a revenue center, like a team that really drives growth and opportunity and revenue in the business versus just costing you as little as possible.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the difference between customer success and customer support? And
yes.
The reason I say that is the last thing you just said kind of makes me feel like an explanation of why customer success even exists, like as a big category, because customer support has historically been about closing tickets as fast as possible, being able to deal with as many tickets as possible with as little people as possible and things like that, which not everyone thinks. And customer success sounds like, how do you make money from that, those efforts in a really like crude way? And I'll say this, where I have very strong opinions about this. I think customer success is generally a made up bullshit category by salespeople. So I'm going to throw that at you since I think you might be building a sales tool or something.
Yeah. So, all right. I knew that you had something to say about success and support. So I'm glad that we're getting into this. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? It's funny how some things are being rebranded and then we all pretend as if it's like a totally new thing and it's super hot and interesting for a while. I've noticed that, I mean, this is true for many categories, right? In marketing, it might be like the growth hacker, which is this totally new category of people that never existed before in marketing.
Or even inbound marketing for that
matter. Inbound marketing for that matter. But also like in sales, it's been like SDRs, like sales development reps, as if that's a category that didn't exist. They used to be called something that just didn't sound good, like qualifier or prospectors, right? That was the title. That role always existed. It just doesn't sound as cool as sales development rep. Like you are developing sales. And it's also cool, like three-letter SDR title. So lots of people that want to be SDRs and high SDRs and SDRs and SDRs where just, you know, years before when that title didn't exist or that type of branding didn't exist, nobody was excited of being a prospect or a qualifier, right? So, and with success is funny in the way that, I mean, that role, it depends from company to company. I still feel there's a little bit of ambiguity with when it comes to like success people because it can mean different things to different companies. But one part of that role is what used to be called account managers. Right? Those are like, hey, once you close somebody as a customer, somebody needs to stay in contact with them, build a relationship with them, train them, answer their questions, send them little gifts when it's birthday time, help their accounts grow, help their accounts expand, like an account manager, right? Somebody that's managing this account. And most people that are success managers today, they're doing the exact same job that an account manager would do, but they think it's a brand new thing that didn't exist in the past. And they feel it's a human thing. You rebrand something, you write some blog posts and then some books and give some talks about it. And then people are attracted to it. More companies trying to hire for it because they think this is this new role that we need to hire for. But fundamentally, when you look beyond the bullshit and the curtains, it's a function that's always been there in businesses. It's always been there, and it's an important one, but it's nothing groundbreaking. Yeah, so today I think success, like what falls under the category of success, some of it is support, is like reactively helping people with issues that they have and try to find opportunities to expand on that. It's some account management, like building relationships with accounts, usually with bigger accounts, making them expand, making them get the most ROI out of the product, blah, yada, yada, yada. And then there's a little bit of, I don't even know if there used to be, like, it's probably used to be things that marketers would do, is like setting up drip emails so when people don't log in to the product or they are not onboarded correctly, they get more information, you know, setting up some tools so you have some early warning signs on what churn is going to be, sending out surveys to really figure out how happy are your customers and things of that nature. None of this is new. None of this is a totally new category. It's just gotten a new branding.
I love it. Thanks for that, because you said it better than I could. I just hate on it. But yeah, what you said. Cool. So we can get back to customer support. Customer success is different than customer support. At the same time, some companies might mix the two. And, you know, account management, just to summarize, account management is also offshoot. So it's almost like customer success is account management meets customer support. And, you know, in my experience, it seems like the teams that have a lot of sales folks and are scaling sales tend to have customer success teams, while in our companies that are all self-service, or the ones that are, we don't have that. We have customer support, and their job is to save revenue if they can, and also get upgrades if it makes sense. Otherwise, the product should be doing that. And the emails we send from the product are more focused around that, because it's a low-touch, no-touch, pretty much no-touch business. So a lot of this is contextual, and splitting out your teams in sales and customer support into like customer success and all that might make sense, just because there's new branding and actually a discipline around it, right? So there is content that is at least somewhat valuable around the difference between them and how you can approach the two. Getting back to customer support before, you know, we finish the episode, one thing I really wanted to talk about that we mentioned kind of a little bit is like, how do you scale it, right? You start out really high touch as, you know, hopefully a founding team, somebody really responsible for the whole business and product in a big way across, you know, the whole product and business. And they're doing support. Maybe a few of you are doing support. How do you scale it? How do you think about that? So, you know, I'll start with you. Like, how have you thought about it, Steli?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Excellent question. So for us, it was definitely the way that we've done it is that in the beginning, we just try to be as close to our customers, make ourselves as available as possible to them. And really, it was not just about fixing issues, but it was about understanding the customer and just getting insights on what's going on. I think as the customer base has grown, one thing we realized is there was one person in the team that gravitated towards owning that area, which was Anthony, my co-founder. And in the process where he was really, it was not just everybody to support, but all of a sudden somebody was responsible for it overall and like owning that area in the business. He started developing some basic philosophies that were really simple, which was really important later on in terms of scaling it, because it gave us kind of the roadmap of how we're going to grow, how much resources we're going to put in, what kind of people we want to hire for it. So we had like a very simple, like, this is support. This is the type of support we want to give. And it's very much like, this is the type of support we like to have as customers. So this is the type of support we want to give to our customers as well. And it was, you know, we want to have people that are fairly technical. We want to give a no bullshit type support. So when something's broken, it's broken. When people request something we know we won't do, we tell them. We don't bullshit them that, yeah, that's a great idea. We'll put that in our, you know, invisible basket of ideas we'll never work on. But thanks for the suggestion. Like, we'll just tell people outright, I get why you want this. Maybe explain it to me a little bit more in detail. But this very specific thing, I know for a fact in the next year or two, it's not on the roadmap. So I just want you to be aware of it. If that's a deal breaker or if that's something that's really critical to you guys, we can brainstorm on workarounds. But if there's not workaround, don't expect this to show up at any time. Anyway, so there were just some philosophies on how we want to give support. And that then led to us being able to find people that fit that criteria. So build a support team that we felt was incredibly qualified, overqualified for a normal support team for most startups. Very technical, very smart, very strong in their communication skills, and people that understand and are curious about the overall business and about the customer. So they were able to be these like people that help other teams with ideas, with opportunities, with insights and all that. So you have somebody that owns it. You then obviously have to start hiring people. And as we're scaling support, we'd have to, for us, the biggest challenges were like making certain tough decisions on what we can do and what we can't do right now. So obviously in a perfect world, I'd love to give 24/7 support on all channels. Right? I would love to support all customers everywhere. If they want to Twitter us, email us, call us, SMS us, ideally, I'd like to be able to offer amazing support 24/7 on all channels all the time. But we can't, right? We just resource-wise, it's not feasible. So we, at some point, we had to decide what are good channels for us and what aren't. And some channels that were in the early days are not anymore. So in the beginning, we would give a lot of, we'd give phone support, live chat support, and email support. Eventually, phone support was not feasible anymore, and it was also not as useful because of the nature of the technical nature of a lot of support requests that we get from our larger customers. So we focused on chat and email support. And honestly, recently, as again the business has grown to a significant size, we realized that giving good chat support has become very, very hard. It's a very noisy place. So for a time, we had one support channel for all our customers, and then we singled it out to do one-on-one support chat. But we realized that a lot of these communications tend to take way more time and not be as useful as email support and not as scalable, and the quality is suffering, et cetera, et cetera. So now we're primarily giving email support unless you're one of our larger customers. And and we do have account managers or success people that will get on a call and help you fix something on a larger scale. But if it's just an issue, if you need to interact with our support team, it's usually email driven right now. So that's one way that we've been able to scale is, at the beginning we offered all channels, and when we've narrowed it down to a channel that where we can be the most useful, helpful, and the quickest turnaround time in a way that scales. And eventually at some point we might add more channels down the line, but right now we've kind of narrowed it down. And then also deciding what is the time zone coverage that you can have if you're a global business. So we have customers all around the world. We don't want to hire a support person in every single country because there's not enough need for it. But what we've done when we hired support people is being very conscious of hiring people, not all of them being on West Coast time. So today we have somebody on the West Coast, we have somebody on the East Coast, and then we have somebody in Berlin that kind of covers the European time zones really well. And that gives us pretty good global coverage so that most of the people, even when they're somewhere around the world that's not the US, when they need something from us, it doesn't take, 12 hours to hear from us. So we're fairly responsive, and within, an hour or two, even if you're in Europe or somewhere else, you get a response, you get a fix for the issues that you have. So those were just some things that we thought. Obviously, there's a lot of other things you can do on the support side. The support team starts creating templates and macros and like templated ways to answer certain problems that come up again and again and again and again. Of course, you put together a knowledge base, a support base, where you write articles, support FAQ articles on certain issues or how to use certain things better. So you just empower the support team to have more and more resources they can reuse versus having to answer every email word by word and every problem word by word again and again, because a lot of this stuff is very repetitive as well. So these are just some things that we've done in a very broad, high-level spectrum. I'd love to hear some of the things you guys have done, because I know that you have a lot more customers. You have a much less no-touch product, much smaller price point, but more volume. So you have a different customer base. So I'd love to hear how you guys scaled it before we wrap up the episode.
Yeah, I'm actually going to give it as my tip, because everything you said, we basically also agree with and do across the board in my companies. One of the big tips I would give would be, it took us a bit to figure this out, because one of our main constraints in our business is people. We don't want to hire more people. That's like just a rule that and a constraint that we like to entertain before we think about hiring people or think about scaling an area in the company. Instead of hiring, is there another way we can do this? Are we efficient enough? Blah, blah, blah. So it used to be the normal support. Oh, let's reduce the number of tickets, you know, or reduce the time that it takes to finish tickets. What we figured out is that reducing the tickets is super important, but how you do it is even more important. So you mentioned one thing about repeatability, and I think that's a standard practice, right? Take your top tickets and see if you can write knowledge base articles about them. What we started learning, and we're still in the process of a lot of this at Crazy Egg, is just because you make a knowledge article doesn't mean it's any good. So scoring those articles and even making it so people can contact you again easily, very easily, if that knowledge base article didn't work. Because what happens is the support team might send someone over to a knowledge base, and then if they don't get their answer, they'll bounce or they'll get pissed off or angry. And so we've now started making it easier to come back. And so the key there, and this is the insight that we had, whenever you do any of those reductions or speed something up, I know there's tactics like, oh, the smiley faces in the bottom of the email, or the, was this article helpful? What we found to be even more helpful is make sure there's a feedback loop that's really strong, where the customer understands they can still come and ask you, even though you shoved them off to some article. And what we found is, like, instead of scoring by the happiness and all this kind of stuff, scoring by the fact that they came back, they read it, or we sent them to an article, they read it, and they still came back because we made it easy, was a better scoring than any of these other things. Because then we really knew the quality of our support with a lens that was quite a bit different. Because then you know whether the